The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Well, welcome. Emily, thank you for organizing everything. My name is David Hunter, and my role is just to introduce everybody and welcome everyone here. I'm a professor here at American University, I think most of you know me, to what I think will be an interesting discussion about the World Summit on Sustainable Development, and in particular, the book that has been written by Herman Vera, to my right. And the book is available over there. And then we'll also, before we hear from Herman, we'll hear from Claudia Winter, who's with the Organization of American States, the OAS, Department of Sustainable Development. This is meant to be an informal session, I think, with questions and comments from the audience as much. I want to say that I'm very happy to be doing this, in part because of the imprint of the law school on this, including Herman is a student here off and on and they in international law programs, as well as being the vice general counsel of the for Peru and the Peruvian Embassy, and it was my honor to be asked to write the preface for this book back about a year ago, and it was particularly my honor to be able to write it and have it translated in a language that I don't speak, so I'm trusting that it made more sense in Spanish than it did when I wrote it in English, but I was glad to see, I was honored to be asked and glad that it was done. The subject of the book, the World Summit on Sustainable Development in Johannesburg, most of you, because you're here, probably know what it was in 2002, planned to be the 10th anniversary of the Earth Summit that had been held in Brazil, in Rio. I think the I'm very pleased about this book for a couple of reasons. One, the summit itself is a very important meeting and gathering that was trying to tackle very difficult issues. But also, I think it's particularly important to have information distributed and disseminated and discussed and debated about issues like sustainable development and like the conference, the Summit on Sustainable Development, in languages other than in English, and distributed in countries other than the OECD countries, and the developing countries, and to have the imprint and discussion of these UN summits discussed more broadly than they otherwise would be, and that's one reason why I was so happy to agree to be a part of this project. The summit, I think, is interesting for a number of reasons, but for me, two stand out, and I want to limit my remarks, so I'll just limit them to two. One is that the summit in Johannesburg was really the culmination of a long process in which there was an effort to integrate in the international setting the issues of development and poverty alleviation and issues related that were of higher priority to the developing countries and global south, to integrate them into the discussion around global environment. And for those who are in my class, you've seen me discuss the evolution from 1972, when we had a conference on the human environment, to a conference in 1992, a summit that brought all the world leaders together in Rio on environment and development, finally culminating in a much more integrated, and some would even argue a primary focus on issues that were of concern to developing countries in the Johannesburg Summit on Sustainable Development, where the agenda, unlike at Rio, where the agenda was primarily environmental and primarily issues that had been brought to the conference by the North, climate change, biological diversity, even the control of forests, most of those issues were issues that were being driven by a Northern agenda, despite the hope in that conference that it would be a more mutual discussion of environment and development issues. Most of the dialogue at Rio was about the environment and was driven by a Northern agenda. I think it was different in Johannesburg. The topics that were discussed there included energy, water, access to water, not the environmental aspects of water only, but primarily access to water and sanitation, access to energy, renewable energy, housing, agriculture, issues that were not necessarily priorities in the environmental crowd, but were a more reflected the priorities of the development agenda, including those of the South. So I think Johannesburg was very important for that shift to where perhaps there was finally a true equality of the agendas in these discussions around sustainable development to reflect more of the priorities of the Global South. I also think Johannesburg was an interesting summit because the governments, perhaps because they thought they would fail if they tried to reach consensus on another treaty or another international instrument, came to focus on this idea of partnerships. And so the conference was very much a meeting around a new, we could even think of it, since we're in a law school, as a new way of lawmaking, in which instead of getting consensus between governments on a treaty only, there was much more effort at getting consensus, getting agreement among the coalitions of the willing, if you will, but a coalition that included NGOs, industry, non-state actors. And so Johannesburg might, we'll have to see, might also be a starting point of a whole new way of addressing environmental issues where the reliance is less on formal treaty making and the slow process of treaties and more on multi-stakeholder partnerships that we then find ways to implement over time. So I think we need to follow those two aspects, and I'm sure there will be other aspects that the other speakers will mention, but I wanted to preface the conference with those. And with that, I'll shut up, and I'll introduce Claudia Winter, who's the legal specialist in the Department of Sustainable Development, the Office for Sustainable Development, at the Organization of American States, the OAS, and more importantly, as a graduate of the law school LLM's program in the year 2000.
Thank you very much, Professor. It's an honor for me to be here in my alma mater and to be representing the Organization of American States here today on behalf of Scott Bond. I want to congratulate Herman on this great effort. I think the book successfully compiled most of the important key issues that were addressed at Johannesburg, and as Professor Hunter was mentioning, the importance of this summit is the issue of the partnerships. And I think it's not only an end, and it's not the summit was not a success in terms of addressing the issues that had already been discussed in the past, but as a way forward, at least for us in the Americas, where we had our first summit on sustainable development in 1996. I think it marks a stage of what has been achieved, but it also opens new doors of what can be done working with member states in the area of sustainable development. And I think Herman's book also makes a point about that transition from addressing just environmental issues to now going to look at all the issues of development as they relate to the environment. For instance, now in ongoing trade negotiations that the U.S. is going, the environmental issues are, you know, a priority. Now countries are talking about effective enforcement of their environmental law in the context of trade negotiations with trade ministries, with the national treasuries of the countries. And this gives a totally different dimension to the environmental agenda, and particularly in the Americas, where you'll probably have heard that six Central American countries have finished negotiating with the United States. Chile has negotiated with the United States, and we have the example of the NAFTA partnership. So I think we need to start or continue thinking with the goals that were set in the plan of action of Johannesburg at looking at eliminating poverty and addressing other issues that are cross-cutting to environment and where environmentalists and people that are working on the environment can make a point. In the OAS, we're working towards a ministerial for sustainable development that's going to take place in Bolivia next year to celebrate the 10th 10-year anniversary of the Bolivia summit. And the agenda is very specific, but one of the points emphasizes partnerships and economic activities, development. What's the relationship between environment and agriculture, between environment and tourism, and the activities that are going to help the peoples of the America get out of poverty. So again, I want to congratulate Herman. I think this is an amazing effort that helps interpret the what's been done in the past three decades and how we can move forward in our hemisphere. So thank you very much.
Steph, we'll hand the microphone, which you already have here, to Herman Rivera, who I said as well, Counselor, Vice General Counsel at the Embassy of Peru.
Thanks. I am very honored to be here in the Washington College of Law, in the American University, and allow me first to thank Professor Hunter and also Claudia for being here with us this afternoon, and also you, who are taking some time to discuss about sustainable development and environment. I will be very brief because I suppose it is better if we can have a session of questions and answers. I think it will be more interesting for us and more enriching for us. I will be probably very brief for that reason, and I will tell you that if you would ask me if I could summarize my book, I would say that it mainly stresses two subjects or two points. The first one is the relationship, the close relationship between development and the protection of the environment, especially in developing countries, where we cannot see these two concepts without being studied together. So that's the first thing. And fundamentally, the idea is to stress the economical development, especially in the region, in Latin America, where we are trying to obtain development since the origins of our republics. That's the first thing. And the second idea is the one related to that to study or to protect the environment in the region, in Latin America, we have to concentrate our efforts into fight poverty. That's probably our main task there. And because poverty is a very difficult situation for our population, and also it poses a serious threat to the democracy in our region and in our nations. Probably in Peru and in Bolivia, the most important activity, economical activity, is mining, and we used to have problems there when we try to exploit, for instance, the gas or the gold mines there, because the population is also not completely integrated in our region. One more thing about that is that this idea to fight poverty is not only of developing countries. No? People like UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has stressed several times that we have to consider seriously this problem. With that, I suppose I have covered basically the main ideas of my book, but I would like to make a personal confession now, because Professor Hunter, as he said, he wrote the foreword for the book, and it was a lucky foreword, because I told him that I was last year on the verge to be promoted. And I think his foreword was helping very much to be promoted. No?
I wish so, I had that
So I thank him again, and Claudia also, and I will be very pleased to talk to you this afternoon.
Thank you.
about the summit, and maybe it's not specifically about the book, but what these summits are expensive to bring people together, and they create a lot of media. They put a burden on the governments to bring expertise to the summits. What can we see? It's 2005. It's 3 years since Johannesburg. Can we see positive impacts that you could tie to that summit? If somebody asks, was the summit worth it? Can you point to things in your region or in your countries that would say the summit is, these summits are worth it?
I think it's a step forward because some observers have said that the summit was unsuccessful in general terms. We need to also have the wider view of the situation. In 2002, the world changed dramatically. And the financing for cooperation and development had been reoriented to security issues. So probably that is my opinion. That is one of the reasons of the failure of the summit of the Johannesburg summit. But if we consider that this a part of a process that started in Stockholm and then in Rio de Janeiro, we can be optimistic for the future in those terms.
Well, I have to agree. Summits are very expensive. And sometimes, you know, as working in a secretariat, you wonder, do you want to have another meeting? Do you want to have another set of mandates when you know that you're not going to have the budget to meet all those mandates and all the things that heads of states and governments are saying in those plans of action. But I think it's important. I mean, the summit was important in terms of marking a transition from Rio to working on the cross-cutting issues that are relevant to the environmental agenda and working in developing partnerships. For example, we've been involved with the United Nations Environment Program in this partnership for sustainable consumption and production, where there have been three meetings and government representatives from all the countries of the Americas have been involved in discussing how can we change the consumption patterns of the youth in our countries, and how can we work with the private sector at the same time to change production patterns? What can the governments do in terms of their spending habits? So I think as a way forward and as a transition to other things, it was very, very important. And I think now I don't think we need to look forward to other summits. We can look forward at what can be achieved after those things were said in Johannesburg. What can be developed from now on?
You don't foresee a Cairo summit of 2000?
Sure.
Maybe.
Why not? But this is a personal opinion and not the opinion of the organization I represent. I would rather see the funds for a summit be invested in work in the ground, doing what needs to be done, because a lot of things have been said since Stockholm. What about getting to work?
Do you agree with that?
Yes. I think one of the most important things now to protect the environment is financing, and that is the key question.
But you still think that that's something that was not considered in 2002, that's probably going to be considered in 2007, that at least you think that should be considered, or maybe 10 years from now, too? I don't know. What's your opinion?
What's on the agenda?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, like you said, okay, so let's work about the 2002 agenda, or do you think that also should have something new to include in this agenda, or in this maybe 2007? I don't know.
What do you think?
Pass.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah, no, pass.
You pass? Okay. Well, you know, countries are evolving and there are new things always in the pipeline. And some countries in Latin America, for example, are now working on valuation of natural resources and development indicators, seeing how they can incorporate their environmental assets into national accounts. So there are many things going on, so there's always going to be something to discuss. But I think it needs to be, like, more work needs to be done in terms of executing the commitments that we already have. And I know that since I was very young, perhaps I started practicing as a young lawyer, and I worked as a paralegal. And in Latin America and in developing countries in general, when you talk about environment by itself, it's not a priority. It's just not right up there with trade, with finance. So I think most of the work needs to be done in financing, like Herman said, and in keeping the agenda up there by rethinking why is environment important? Why does environment keep us going? Without environment, we cannot have food. Without environment, we cannot have health. So we need to start, you know, tying the links and working more into addressing the cross-cutting issue. That's my opinion. But of course, there's always something that needs to be said and done. Public participation is an issue that was addressed at Rio. It's been addressed at every summit, but there's still a lot of work to be done. Things are public. You can have access to them, but go and try to get it. You're going to have a hard time.
I fully agree with the opinion.
Picking up on your last point, you know, in the United States, our environmental movement started with a couple of very celebrated books, like Silent Spring about pesticides and the Love Canal, you know, the Superfund site under the housing development and some other things. And so it built up a lot of popular support in the U.S. for the environmental movement. And so I guess one question I would have is, is that happening in Latin America now? Are you having some growth in public interest in the environment based on particular disasters or particular problems that have gotten a lot of publicity? That's my first question. Second question relates more to what I've seen in Europe, European Union activities, when the EU proposed all these directives that the countries had to adopt, including the developing countries or former communist countries like Bulgaria or something, and they just the mere act of passing all these laws and regulations has generally forced them to start implementing some of these things, and I think it's really made a measurable difference in a lot of these countries, just the mere act of trying to conform their laws and regulations to a pretty high standard that was promulgated by the European Union. So I guess I'm talking about sort of a ground-up, grassroots sort of movement, and then a top-down sort of approach. How you react to those two approaches in Latin America?
The awareness for the environment in Latin America is. It starts, I think, in 1972, after the Stockholm Declaration and the United Nations the reunion of Stockholm in Sweden. Then the countries in the region have different approaches. I will just point out one idea who can give you a view of the situation. the authority, for instance, the authority who from the government, the authority who has to administrate or control the problematic of the environment in every country differs. In Peru, we have an organization like the EPA here, and but in Bolivia, for instance, they have a Ministry of Environment. In Venezuela, they also have a Ministry of Environment. And in Chile, they also have something like the EPA.
Does it make a difference?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. But as you can see, the approach differs in every country. So we don't have the region. I mean, does not have a clear picture of what is happening with the environment there and also in other parts of the world. Regarding the question about Europe, is different, no? For my experience, I've lived in the Netherlands for 5 years. It was my previous post in The Hague. And for my experience, Europeans are more orientated to protect the environment. They have several set of rules, with more emphasis in the protection of the environment. They invented the concept of precautionary principle that Professor Hunter taught us when I was his student. So, but now they are also trying to avoid those constraints that they made. Because the protection of the environment is costly, and even for developed countries, it makes sense for them, for the time being, to orientate those funds to other preoccupations. That's my view.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Last year, there was a major controversy internationally over the Camisea pipeline in Peru, which was running from the Andes through some indigenous territories to the sea near a potentially near a important biological area. And it became a big international campaign to limit financing at the Inter-American Development Bank, the U.S. Export-Import Bank. How has that had any impact on the discussion about development and environment inside Peru? Did it spark more debate internally or for either?
This is a very difficult question.
Well, not officially, not as an
ambassador. We don't have indigenous population there, so because it's in the coast. But we did have some concerns about the damage that could the nature of this place had if we put the pipeline for the Camisea gas there. A solution was found, giving them some part of the money who will be received by the authorities. But yes, it's very conflictual.
And did it create a debate inside Peru? Was there dialogue?
Yes, well, the media and also the civil society and the non-governmental organizations try to raise the awareness about the situation there. But we have a long tradition of, in our governments, and this is not a secret, of authoritarianism. So at the end, the decision was taken by the government, and it is working beautifully, I think, now, but still there are some problems.
Well, I think going back to the first point, everybody loves to do natural disaster response and emergency management. Why? Because that gets a lot of press and that gives a lot of political credit. But when you talk about mitigation and disaster preparedness efforts, nobody pays attention to that word.
I'm just,
aside from the experience that we've had in the U.S. in the past couple of days, I mean, we've been working for over 20 years now on different programs on natural disaster preparedness in Latin America. And only financial institutions have shown a lot of interest because it helps manage the risk that they're funding. But otherwise, when you talk about amending construction codes, so the schools and university campuses and hospitals, which are the traditional places used as shelter, can be safe, it's not, you know, too relevant. If you go to the other side of the coin, looking, for example, at environmental regulations, norms, and laws, civil law countries, we have a lot of written laws, but developing countries usually don't have a lot of response capacity for enforcement, for monitoring. They don't have equipment. So it's kind of left on the side. But, for example, when you go back to the example of the trade agreements that you have to sell to Europe, and Europe has the supermarkets have the Eurogap, for example, and if what you're exporting doesn't meet the environmental requirements of the EU, you can't sell, period. So you have to comply with the requirements and the laws of other countries. This is kind of the effect of globalization. And I think it usually an external factor is what influences the level of enforcement and of development of the law.
Again, I have a two-part question. The first is related to the forum in which these issues come up. And in particular, a lot of the discussion, particularly around development issues relative to environmental issues, is being played out in free trade agreements. And I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about the political choices that Latin American countries are facing, the CAFTA being an example of one where at least some observers from New York, like myself, were disappointed that the pressure being brought to bear by the United States was successful in forcing choices that might be bad for the environment, or at least bad for development in a number of ways. The related question goes back to then the vision of the economy and how one is going to lift Latin America out of poverty and develop. And there, again, I'm wondering, particularly having done some work in the biodiversity field, whether that's viewed as the way toward development, or as kind of overselling the way to development. If that's not it, where is it going to come from?
We see very optimistically, I mean, the government, especially the government, because they intend to, as you correctly said, to sell the treaties, the free trade agreements, to our countries. They are good, okay? They are good because ministries have very good teams of negotiators, and they definitely for us will bring many sources of funding, and also the possibility that the people in our countries could obtain a better income. No, that has happened with CAFTA, for instance. I was reading in the Post some time ago the discussion before the House approved the CAFTA agreement, and even here in the U.S., you probably know better than me, there was no complete agreement. No? There some Democrats said
by one vote.
That's correct. So some the parties were didn't have an agreement on that issue. But we see the agreements optimistically. We want to believe that they are good for us, and probably that is one part of the question, but it's not that definitive question answer. I don't have an answer on that particular question. What I can tell probably is something that has been suggested by authors like Jeffrey Sachs, for instance, who is a close advisor of Kofi Annan in the poverty alleviation subjects. He thinks, well, I haven't read the book yet, but I think he believes that to alleviate poverty or to eliminate poverty in the world, we need to make that, we need to find some creative solutions, like try to make that corporations could see as good for them. I remember also an example. It's not a direct answer, but probably will help to see the situation. I remember that in classes with David, he suggested that some companies like British Petroleum, like BP, are taking seriously something related with the protection of the environment. So we can see that corporations can look to the problem, and not all of them, but some of them, and that's a beginning, as they say. Probably that's one part of the solution.
Bring more revenues to the countries or foreign currency is not really development programs to complement the impact that the trade agreement will have, because certainly we know that there are good things for the environment and there are bad things.
I want to follow up on this question, but in Latin America or in Central America, the nature reasons most of them are responsible. But in every country, they are searching for economic growing or economic development. However, when they are discussing about the trade and environment, in your practical opinion and experiences, what do you think, what's the first priority step for the country to set up the first dialogue or the first step to build on the conversation first? Yeah, I mean, if some countries that would like to approach for trade and environmental issues first, in your practical experiences, what do you suggest that those countries, what kinds of the first step for those countries to build out the first dialogue or first conversation first,
okay,
to discuss or to get some resolutions for the environmental and trade?
For the linkages between trade and environment.
Yeah, and both of them can search for win-win status for economic growth and environmental protections.
I think there are a lot of things to be done, but one that is very important is strengthening institutional capacities, both on the trade side and on the environment side, because you're faced with a problem that sometimes trade ministries don't talk to environment ministries. Just because he's environment, I think I don't need to talk to him. So we need to strengthen the capacities at the technical level so that at each regulating entity, there's somebody responsible of being the link with their counterpart, so that there can be a true dialogue at the national level. And I think if you establish that, you can start talking with another country, because at least you have some internal coordination. But without that, if it's not hard, it's almost impossible.
I agree.
I was kind of commenting. I think that what he was referring to, from my experience, I'm in Peru, is we found a common ground with Brazil, for example, in the Amazon, where we have populations on both sides of the country that needed to raise their standard of living, and we also both needed to protect the Amazon and the rainforest. And also with Bolivia, for example, we share part of Lake Titicaca, and that way that's how the communication started. What I was trying to, I don't know if that's what he was asking, but I was going to ask you after, what is the countries in Latin America doing to find the funding to start this raising the standard of living? I read on the book that there's a plan to 2015, so we mentioned Costa Rica, and which country is the leading country on this project?
The countries are doing a lot of different things. I think you mentioned Costa Rica. That's the example of excellency, because Costa Rica has done a great job of linking environmental issues to economic issues. For example, they developed the tourism industry in a way that is very profitable to the country. It provides social benefits, and at the same time, they preserve the environment. They've also worked on a management system called Payment for Ecological Services, where basically they pay the farmers for the land and the forest that they protect, and that's subsidized by green taxes to transportation. The cost of the environmental service of energy and water is added to the utility bill. So there are different ways that you can build the linkages and work to different to meet different objectives. Costa Rica is just one example. I don't know if concretely in terms of looking at WSSD, countries have a plan towards 2015. Each country has a national plan of how they're going to get the environmental and sustainable development objectives related to conventions, to multilateral environmental agreements like the Convention on Biodiversity, the desertification, Stockholm. So there are many ways to get to Rome.
The region, the awareness for the protection of the environment in the region is increasing. I fully agree with Claudia in that particular idea, and the idea that you mentioned about Brazil is also very important. Probably Brazil is they have a Ministry of Environment. They are trying to do its best into save the rainforest, although not always is possible. For me, the example, South America, probably in Brazil, as you mentioned.
I think it's interesting in financing. Part of the discussion around WSSD was that perhaps by having these different partnerships, you would be decentralizing the need for financing. In other words, each partnership would have, as part of its goal, an effort to try to find the funding to fulfill its own goal, and in some ways would maybe break the reliance on the broad international, the Global Environment Facility, or the promises to the Millennium Development Goals. It may be too early to say how that will work, but there are, at least in some of the partnerships that I'm aware of, they're looking for their own finance base, some of it coming from the private sector, or some of it coming from foundations. So it may work to decentralize. And a comment to the question that Mauro had asked before about what the priorities might be that haven't been raised yet in 2007, I think in some ways we're in a period of really where there's a lot of focus on implementation. There seem to be a lot of promises that were made in Rio and even in Johannesburg, plus with the Millennium Development Goals. If you add on the promises from Kyoto and climate change, there looks like a period within the next 5 to 10 years where I would say less important is the adding on of new promises, but finding new ways to do implementation, which includes finding new ways of financing. And that's part of the promise of Johannesburg, which I have to say I'm a little skeptical about, but it's interesting, and perhaps we'll learn something about how to find new ways of financing by having a more diverse approach through these literally dozens and tens and hundreds of partnerships that were announced around Johannesburg that often included at least one entity with real money. if you get an agreement to get lead out, a partnership to get lead out of the gasoline, and it includes some of the major oil companies, some of the major governments, and some of the major NGOs, then the financing for it may come from any variety of different places. And that's some of the diverse approach to jobs. Other questions? All right. Well, any closing comments? I just gave my closing.
Well, thank you very much for being here. I know you probably have other classes and other things to do. I just wanted again to thank the law school, the International Legal Studies program, my colleagues Emily and Sandra that are here today. It's always a pleasure to be back here, and if I can be of help in any way, they know where to contact me. I'm at the OAS anytime.
I want again thank you, Claudia and David and professors and all of you for being here. For me, it's a very nice and rewarding experience always to talk and to avoid the everyday work in the office where I have to deal with several things which are not as interesting and rewarding like this meeting this afternoon.
Are you doing another book?
but it will be a novel probably about the
Related, but international, yeah. International, okay.